We'll hear arguments first this morning in the case of Chandler and Granger against Florida. Mr. Hirshhorn, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
May Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. This is a criminal conviction in which the only issue raised before this Court is whether the defendants were denied their rights to a fair trial and due process of law by virtue of the mere presence of cameras in the courtroom over their objection. The appellants contend that this...
This is any camera.
Any camera in which an effort is made to broadcast or tape record for later broadcast and still photographic equipment.
Does the record show that the trial was televised either live or taped?
The record will reflect that portions of the trial were televised over the evening news in certain spots. A total of 2 minutes and 55 seconds were televised on the evening news of selected portions of the trial.
How about still photographs?
The record will not reflect the presence of any still photographic camera present during the proceedings.
But this was both audio and visual.
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice.
Now, the record reflect the location of the camera?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in the appendix to the appellee's reply brief at page A36, you have a picture of the courtroom in which the circle with the X in it reflects the presence of the television camera.
But the recording was made of the entire trial?
No, Mr. Chief Justice. The television camera was present only for jury selection, only for the direct examination and portions of cross-examination of the state's main witness, and for the rendition of the verdict.
How about the defense evidence?
None whatsoever. There was no recordation of defense evidence by the television camera, nor was it even present during presentation of defense evidence.
Was the jury sequestered?
No, it was not, Mr. Justice Rehnquist. The motions were repeatedly made to sequester the jury and denied. Record will reflect that.
But the District Court of Appeal in Florida found against you on your claim of prejudice from the pretrial publicity.
That is correct, and that is perhaps because I misperceived the issue in the District Court of Appeals when I argued it. This is not a pretrial publicity case like Gannett. This is not an effort to close the courtroom like Gannett in pretrial matters. This is not an effort, as in Richmond newspapers, to close the trial. This is not a closure case. The defendants here do not seek whatsoever to limit a normal investigative and normal methods of covering trials in progress. What is under attack here is the method by which television claims it has a right of access. And we contend, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, that the method is inherently prejudicial, just as in Estelle versus Williams, this Court concluded that it was inherently prejudicial for a state to compel a prisoner to go to trial in prison garb without any showing of psychological studies.
Then you accept the finding of the Florida District Court of Appeal that there was no prejudice in fact in this case?
I concede that the Florida District Court of Appeals was correct in finding on the record there was no measurable prejudice. The issue we raised there and the issue we raised here is that human nature and our understanding of human nature and common sense tells us that being on television is different and than any other type of public trial, and that although we may not be able to measure with specificity the prejudice, behavioral scientists tell us that people act differently, posture differently, pose differently when they know they're on TV.
Or was this kind of evidence introduced in your record at some point?
No, we were not permitted to introduce any evidence. We were never granted a de novo hearing on this.
Did you tender such evidence?
Yes. No, Mr. Chief, Mr. Justice Rehnquist. What occurred was we filed a motion to exclude cameras in the courtroom over the defendant's objection. The trial judge determined that he had no discretion. It was mandatory. He denied my motion, certified the question to the Florida Supreme Court without a hearing. It was fully briefed, including psychological studies. After briefing on the certified question, the Florida Supreme Court dismissed the certified question on the grounds that it was not dispositive of the issue. When we went back to trial, we were then placed in a posture where the judge said he had a mandate. He could not even ask whether it was mandatory or discretionary. There is no evidence that there was, in fact, prejudice per se because we were not afforded an evidentiary hearing, nor do I believe an evidentiary hearing would have been necessary. An evidentiary hearing was not necessary in Estelle versus Williams. An evidentiary hearing was not necessary in Jackson versus Deno when this court determined that it is inherently prejudicial to a defendant for a jury to determine the voluntariness of a confession.
Well, you're saying, in effect, that we as presumably not behavioral psychologists, but as lay people in that field can determine on our own whether it's inherently prejudicial that something be done.
I am saying that, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, that your understanding of human nature, as you did in Tummy, Turner, Estes, it is not necessary to have an evidentiary hearing because we all know that timid people become more timid, nervous people become more nervous. People who are not used to being in a courtroom can only have their anxiety exacerbated by the presence of a television camera. Over.
I'm also saying, really, I think that there's a bit of ham in all of us, including jurists.
Mr. Justice Blackmun, I think that is accurate, but I'm not sure that ham is the issue. I know television will make a cocky witness more cocky. I certainly know it will make a timid witness more timid.
Well, and no, the inherent. When you say you know these things, you get them by osmosis, or how do you? I realize we all, quote, know certain things that we can't demonstrate to.
Well.
But when you say you know, this is from your own experience as a litigation lawyer?
Mr. Chief Justice, I think we know that no judge would not be fair and impartial where he imposed a $12 fine against somebody, or his portion of the fine came to $12. But this court in Tummy said that procedure is inherently prejudicial because it creates the possibility, the probability of a denial of a fair and impartial trial. Human nature is such that being on television is more important than not being on television.
Well, how do we know that without some sort of findings of fact or conclusions of law?
Well, there's never been a hearing on the issue. There's never been a trial. There's never been an adversary hearing. When the Florida Supreme Court enacted this rule, which made it mandatory and the defendant had no consent, it did it without the benefit of testimony.
Well, haven't Florida courts rejected your position?
Oh, yes. They have.
So we have a set of state courts saying that your submission is erroneous.
We have a set of state courts saying that the public's the method of access is more important in the context of sunshine in the government than an individual's rights to a fair and impartial trial.
You mean did the Florida courts say that yes, there is some measure, inherent prejudice to the defendant? They said there was none, didn't they?
It said there was nothing demonstrated as applied.
Well, we'd have a set of findings against you.
In that sense, yes, we do.
What did you tender before trial that would support what you now say you know?
There was nothing. No. I'm sorry, Mr. Chief Justice.
What you now say you know, what did you tender to support that conclusion?
Well, I tendered my faith in the system, I presume, but there was nothing to tender, Mr. Chief Justice. The Florida Supreme Court made it mandatory.
No, at the trial court level, when you first got into the, were confronted with the problem, did you make an offer of proof to the court, or did the court deny you any opportunity to do that?
No and yes. I did not make an offer of proof, and the trial judge said, it won't make any difference if you do. The rule is mandatory, but I'll certify the question as one of great public import. Let the Florida Supreme Court hear it.
Well, then to pursue Mr. Justice Rehnquist's question and several others, are we to rely, for example, on, to take some current things, question and answer interview by George Ball in current issue of Newsweek and something like that, and a column by a columnist in the Washington Post, Ellen Goodman, who said that television tends to distort all the processes that it, not all, but distorts the processes that it depicts. Is that the kind of thing we, as a reviewing court, can rely on?
Well, when you review Jackson versus Steno and Estelle versus Williams and Rideau and Turner, there were no evidentiary matters or psychological studies. This court held that where the procedure is employed is inherently prejudicial, it wasn't necessary to discuss the facts of the case.
But how do we know here that it was inherently prejudicial?
Since time began, human nature hasn't changed, Mr. Justice Rehnquist.
Well, you made time began.
Nor did we have the Constitution.
Yeah, I know.
Nor was television.
Did you rely on the Estes case at all?
Yes, I did.
What was the evidence of actual prejudice in that case?
None. No evidence whatsoever.
Didn't the Supreme Court just take judicial notice of everything, at least in Chief Justice Warren's opinion and in the majority opinion? They had no hearing on prejudice, did they?
None whatsoever. And, in fact, in the Estes case, the only thing that was televised was the prosecutor's closing argument and the rendition of the verdict. And we suggest in this case that this is not a gag order case and this is not a First Amendment access case. The method of gathering news is at issue here because the method is inherently prejudicial. This court, for example, would not hesitate to strike down any state statute which said the state had the right to compel a defendant who was a prisoner to appear in prison garb because, for the same reason, appearing in prison garb, human nature tells the jurors there's something different.
Mr. Hirshhorn, you referred me to page A36 in that diagram.
Yes.
Am I to infer that the word electric locates the
electricity,
the camera?
No.
Where's the camera?
The camera is that circle with the X in it. Electric is so that the cameraman would know where to plug his cord in.
Oh, I see. But the camera's over in the public seats section.
Yes,
is that it?
Right now, behind the bar.
What's the evidence that the participants in the trial and the jury knew it, that they were being televised?
Well, the jury box is right next to it. And
No. What is the evidence in the record that the proceedings were being televised?
The record will reflect that during jury selection, I asked most jurors whether being on television would in one way or another affect.
Well, did anyone point out to them the camera located where?
Oh, yes. Yes, and the record will so reflect. I think in one of my questions that's in my appendix to my original brief, I pointed out in the question, you see the camera over there. And a little later on, during Mr. Sion's testimony, I pointed out to the court at a sidebar, Your Honor, I want the record to reflect the cameras are present, and the judge quickly corrected me. It was a single camera.
Mr. Hirshhorn, I would almost conclude from your submission that you would urge that neither the defendant nor the prosecution together could stipulate to have cameras.
That is correct. And unlike Richmond newspapers, where the prosecution and defense stipulated and the judge granted the stipulation, there was no discretion whatsoever. The judge had to do it.
You think there just ought to be a flat rule excluding them, no matter whether there's any objection by anybody or not?
No, that would be asking for too much. I think.
Well,
that
whose objection must be waived before cameras can be just the defendant?
Yes. In Richmond, if you'll permit me to explain my answer. In Richmond, this court said that closure places a very high burden on the defendant in an effort to protect the First Amendment and the public right to know. Down the scale a little bit, you said in Gannett, pretrial closure places a high burden on the defendant in a need to protect the Sixth Amendment, the defendant's personal right. We say that where a defendant objects to the presence of cameras in the courtroom, his objection is sufficient if a witness, because the method of gathering news is inherently prejudicial, if a witness or a juror objects, then the judge, the per se rule is where the defendant objects. If a witness or a juror objects, or a lawyer objects, then the judge has to do the balancing test. Which is more important at this point, the witness or juror's right of privacy if there is one in a courtroom, and I don't think that there is, against the public's method of the media's method of gathering news in this case.
But you wouldn't say the defendant in that kind of a situation you were just describing would have any special right to demand that television be admitted?
No, and in fact, there are cases that obviously it's been used as a tool where a defendant has demanded that a camera come in the courtroom because he wanted to embarrass or humiliate the victim who is going to be testifying against him, and the judges have exercised their discretion properly under the theory that the Sixth Amendment is not absolute, nor is the First. The Sixth Amendment yields to confidential informers, trade secrets, unruly people, embarrassment, Richmond. The First Amendment yields to Zurcher, yields to Brandsburg, yields to libel and obscenity, yields to the clear and present danger doctrine, yields to Zemel, yields to Saxby. The First Amendment has to yield.
Yeah, but this case is in quite a different posture from either DePasquale or Richmond newspapers, in that the state has opted for television coverage. In those two cases, the state opted against coverage.
Mr. Chief Justice,
you make it sound as if the Constitution covers the entire 100% of the spectrum,
Mr. Justice,
without any state latitude.
Mr. Justice Rehnquist, the state did not opt. The Florida Supreme Court enacted a rule without the consent of the governed.
Well, that's the state for our purposes when the Florida Supreme Court opts it for a rule.
Well, Mr. Rehnquist, your views on states' rights are well known to me. I have read and reread your dissent, and I suggest to you that the state, under states' rights, could not enact a rule that said, Chandler, if you're a convicted felon or in prison, you appear in trial wearing Dade County Jail on your T-shirt, because that is inherently prejudicial.
Because it violates the federal Constitution.
And I suggest, Mr. Rehnquist, that the presence of cameras in the courtroom, which is an unnecessary method of gathering news, violates the Sixth Amendment for the simple reason that Devitt and Blackmar, they are the landmark when it comes to standard jury instructions. Every trial, federal and state, at the conclusion of the case, the jury is instructed, you, the jury, are the sole judges of the credibility and believability of the witnesses. You, the jury, shall determine the demeanor of the witness and the witness's ability to know and remember the facts about which he testifies. How do we know that the witness is sweating because on cross-examination the defense attorney finally hit a nerve center that causes the witness to wonder whether he's going to recant? Or is he sweating because of the presence of cameras in the courtroom? We don't know that. But we certainly know that the greater the exposure, and behavioral scientists have told us, and we know that, as in Brown versus Board of Education in the Brandeis brief that was filed, that behavioral scientists tell us what human nature and common sense tells us.
Now, Mr. Hirshhorn, obviously the behavioral scientists' views are relevant here, but if no courtrooms undertake to try this out, how will behavioral scientists or judges or anyone else accumulate some empirical data, if empirical data will ever be available, on the consequences instead of just what might be called speculation by behavioral scientists and judges?
Well, that's what the dissenters in Estes left open. That day has come. And I think Mr. Justice Stewart and Mr. Justice Harlan and those who joined were reluctant to close the doors on the grounds that we need this novel form of experimentation to see. Well, we've had this novel form of experimentation, an experiment without direction, an experiment without guidance, an experiment without controls. And I don't think anybody in this bench can stand here and say, when 23% of the jurors or 30% of the witnesses who finally responded to questionnaires which were subjective in and of themselves admitted an awareness of cameras in the courtroom. I mean, that's infecting the process by its very method. That gets right down to the whole purpose behind due process of law. That gets us back to In re Murchison. That gets us back to why having a bailiff who is also a deputy sheriff and a witness, but who swears he didn't say anything to the jurors in Turner versus Louisiana, why this court didn't hesitate to strike that down as being an inherently prejudicial aspect of a denial of due process of law.
How many states have taken Florida's course?
10. I'm sorry. There are 27 states that currently permit televising,
how many,
including Maryland. However, 10 require the consent of the defendant.
Of the defendant.
Right.
So there
Maybe
are,
it's the other way around.
So there are 18?
Let's see. 10 do not require the consent of the defendant. There are 17 in addition who do require the consent of the defendant.
So if you were in one of those 17 states, you wouldn't be here.
That's correct. I absolutely would not be here because of the waiver principles.
Under the Florida procedure, can the complaining witness, does the trial judge have discretion to exclude any pictures if the complaining witness is testifying?
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice. The, at page 779 of the Post Newsweek decision, there's a paragraph that says the presiding judge may exclude the electronic media coverage of a particular participant only upon a showing that such coverage will have a substantial effect upon the particular individual, which would be qualitatively different from the effect on members of the public in general, and such effect will be qualitatively different from coverage by other types of media. However, two things occur. One is it doesn't preclude coverage of the trial, but just coverage of that particular witness. And two is, despite what that says, I don't know how a judge is going to apply it. I don't understand, and I don't think the bench and the bar, and I don't think witnesses will know how to demonstrate the qualitative difference. And what that does is invite mini trials during trials on qualitative difference. Do we really have to have a behavioral scientist tell us that when a juvenile or a woman is victimized by a sexual assault, she doesn't need to testify in front of a television camera to further and deepen her humility? Do we need evidence in the record of that? I suggest not.
Mr. Hirshhorn, does the record tell us why the portions of the trial that were televised and no others, and others, why the defense case was not televised?
Well, the record doesn't have to. The Constitution of the United States tells us. The First Amendment.
That doesn't explain it to me.
Well, I didn't mean to be flip, Mr. Justice Stevens. I can't. This court has held in Cox Broadcasting in Tornillo that we can't compel. Not even this court can.
Are you telling me that it was just a voluntary decision by the media, that that's all they wanted to do?
That's quite correct. The media selects what it wants to televise, just like it selects what it wants to put in the newspapers.
Does the record also tell us, as I understand, there's one mini camera in the courtroom? Does it tell us what it picked up in the camera? Is it just focused on the witness, or is it on the whole courtroom, or how does it? What is the picture that is televised? You know.
This record won't tell because I was busy trying the case, and I have to presume from the clips I saw on the evening news that they focused on Mr. Sion, the state's main witness, giving his key testimony, and they focused on jurors giving responses.
There's a cameraman in the courtroom who points the camera in different directions. It's not just a fixed camera, is what I'm trying to
say. It's a fixed camera on a tripod swivel, but I think they use a zoom lens so they don't move the camera per se.
But the camera can swivel around.
I must confess.
Anderson, in your colloquy with Mr. Justice Stevens, were you suggesting that you support your argument in the fact that there are only snippets of what the camera picks up that actually are broadcast in the evening news?
Yes.
And to what effect?
Because not in the sense of what the public sees, but the fact that the jury knows that the camera's present just for that portion of the state's direct examination, but is not present for any portion of cross or the defendant's case. And I suggest that behavioral scientists, common sense, and human nature tells us that if a television camera picks up one part of a trial but not another, it's because someone has made a judgment that that part is more important than the other.
Well, that has nothing to do with the defendant's rights, though, does it?
Oh, yes, it does, with all due respect.
What the public sees is
case. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Of course, I was trying to draw that distinction. I don't care what the public sees in terms of the defendant's rights. It's what the jurors perceive.
The jury was not sequestered here, was it?
The jury was not sequestered.
Unless you were concerned about what the neighbors might say to the jurors or something like that.
That is the only aspect.
It's related to selective televising of a prosecution's case and not the defense's case.
That is the only aspect. The marshal has advised me I have about 6 minutes. I'd like to reserve it for rebuttal, if I might.
Mr. Fox,
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I will be arguing the case in chief here this morning. The Attorney General of Florida will address broader policy considerations with respect to the 17 states and the Conference of Chief Justices who have submitted amicus briefs in support of the state's position. The state's position in this case is quite clear. The defendants received a fair trial. The defendants, on the other hand, Your Honors, seek to turn the Constitution upside down. They make no effort whatsoever to discuss how Noel Chandler and Robert Granger did not receive a fair trial.
Mr. Fox, before you get through, will you explain to me why the Estes decision is not squarely in point in this case?
The Estes opinion, Your Honor, as I'm sure you're well aware, is...
I'm talking about the holding. In that case, based specifically on the one question the Court granted certiorari to consider.
It is a plurality opinion in which only four members of the Court joined in a rule, per se, rule against
the judgment of the
court.
Judgment of the Court on the facts of the case. Why isn't that directly on point? In fact, why isn't that a stronger case, because there the jury was sequestered?
It is a stronger case, Your Honor, and that's precisely the point. The facts in that case...
A stronger case for allowing the television.
Right. Pardon me, Your Honor?
I say it's a stronger case for allowing television because the jury was sequestered.
But on the other hand, the extreme fact circumstance of that case would justify...
There were no extreme fact circumstances. I understand it. All that was at a pretrial hearing on whether or not to allow television. At the trial itself, they had a thing built up there so you couldn't notice the television cameras, and there was no disorder during the trial.
But Mr. Justice,
I understand the case correctly.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Justice Stevens, the Court focused upon the pretrial hearings, the cable snaking all over the floor,
the pictures.
I asked
you, why wasn't the holding specifically in point here?
It is not specifically on point, Your Honor, because of the fact circumstance there. The facts there do not remotely relate.
In what respect? How are they different other than the fact that the jury was sequestered there?
The facts in that case,
I'm talking about the trial, too, not the pretrial hearing.
Your Honor, I would submit to you that the trial was a separate and distinctly serene proceeding. In fact, we would submit that the only televised portion of that trial was the prosecutor's opening and closing argument, I believe.
It was selective portions here, too, though.
Yes, you're certainly correct, Your Honor. But I think the Court was concerned with the infection that had preceded the trial, as if, for example, in the Shepherd case, the infection that had preceded the trial.
The Court declined to grant certiorari on that very question.
But, Your Honor, if you a reading of the Clark opinion, a reading of the Warren, Douglas, and Goldberg opinions, they concentrate entirely upon the pretrial hearings and the infection which preceded the trial. They do not discuss the serenity which prevailed at the trial. They
but
do
the
not
trial
separate.
Was, that's all that was actually an issue in the Court's judgment. And the Court, as a court, not a plurality, but a court of five people, reversed the conviction in that case because of the presence of television at the trial, per se.
Your Honor, the
so why
the court,
is my brother Stevens exactly correct in his question?
Most respectfully, by your leave, Mr. Justice Stewart, I'd submit to you that Mr. Justice Harlan would not have joined in a per se rule, and in fact he did not. He states quite clearly in his opinion that he restricts his holding and his support of the majority opinion to the very fact of the Estes trial, the facts in that case, the extremely...
The fact that he relied on was the fact it was a notorious case, not a run-of-the-mill case.
Right.
And this was sufficiently notorious so that it justified 2.5 minutes on the evening news. Do you rely on the distinction between a notorious case and a routine case?
Yes, Your Honor, that becomes the question then. What's a notorious case? I would submit to you the Estes case was a notorious case.
But
this case.
The rule apply to all trials?
Yes, Your Honor, it certainly does. I think
would
if the court
apply
wants.
In a drunken driving case?
Pardon me?
Would it apply in a drunken driving case?
Yes, Your Honor, any judicial proceedings.
Would it apply to a misdemeanor case?
Yes, Your Honor, any trial. Or
it would apply to a spitting on the sidewalk case?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Or to an Estes case.
Or to an Estes case, or to a Zamora case, which was viewed...
The Estes case was a case involving a lot of financial records, if I remember the opinion, whereas this is a case involving a couple of police officers who allegedly robbed a popular restaurant.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'd submit that 3 minutes on the evening news does not compare to the 11 volumes of publicity in the trial of the Estes case.
On the pretrial publicity point, that's certainly true, but that was not what was decided.
That's right.
Do you think there'd be any tendency on the part of the local television station to televise a case involving an action to quiet title to real estate?
Yes, Your Honor, as the Wisconsin brief notes, the television cameras have been at zoning appeals, at traffic appeals, at any sort of civil proceedings.
The action to quiet title?
Excuse me?
The action to quiet title that I hypothesized. You think there'd be any interest in the television station or in any of the people who watch television to see that kind of a trial?
Your Honor, I would submit to you that it is possible that a circumstance could arise where a quiet title case could be publicized. In particular,
I'm talking about the typical action to quiet title. I picked the least noticeable. If it were an action to quiet title on the state capitol, I assume
right.
It would be quite new.
Yes,
but
that was the case I had in mind.
Quiet title on an ordinary residence, would the television be interested in it?
Your Honor, that's a question of editorial policy, which I think this Court has not intruded into. It's a matter of First Amendment freedoms. I think the editorial policy of the stations cannot be governed by this Court or any court. They don't have the time or the expense to put a camera in every courtroom, and that type of case would probably certainly have a very low priority.
Let me ask you this hypothetical question, since we have no empirical evidence in the record. Suppose in this particular case, the television station, after showing whatever it was they showed, the opening statement and the closing arguments of the prosecution.
In Estes, Your Honor?
No, in this case.
No, this case was a brief segment of the jury selection and a brief segment of the state's key witness.
Yeah. Now, that's all the television viewers saw it, as were
yes,
able to
Your
witness.
Honor.
Suppose they then followed a recent example and said, call 993-1234 if you think this fellow is guilty, no toll charge. Call 111-4567 if you think he's not guilty, and we'll take a poll. Would the court under the Florida rule have any authority to say, no, you can't do that?
Yes, Your Honor, I think the Florida Supreme Court has clearly, in the final paragraph of its opinion, left a warning to the media that any abuses by the media would result in a rescission of the rule. Now, this is a rule.
If they abuse the First Amendment, the Supreme Court's going to go after them?
No, Your Honor.
Is that the way you read that rule?
Pardon me?
Is that the way you read that rule?
Your Honor, in the final paragraph of the opinion, the court says that the past abuses of the press are in the past, and the press, and we believe that. That is what the court states in its final paragraph of the post-Newsweek opinion. And I think quite clearly the Florida Supreme Court has left it open for abuses by the press. And I think in the event that there are abuses by the press, in the event that the trust that the court has extended in the in balancing the public policy of open trials and open government in Florida, I think that the Florida Supreme Court quite clearly could withdraw the rule.
What would be your view, if you care to express it, on whether that would be an abuse of the rules, the hypothetical I gave you, to take this instant ballot, having heard only the prosecution's evidence?
The basis in the rule for the rescission, Your Honor?
Could the court have found them in contempt for doing that?
I think the judicial control, which has been left in the Florida trial courts by the rule, it's quite clear in the rule that the judicial control and discretion to control the camera and the media and disputes among the media is strictly restricted into the trial court.
Could the court properly find them in contempt for having shown only the prosecution's case and then take an instant poll on guilty or innocent?
I think it's a very close question. I think a trial court probably would, and then we'd litigate it from there. I would submit to you, Your Honor, that the questions that the defendant raises and the questions, the concerns that the court has expressed will occur in any sort of highly publicized case, whether it's televised or not. They could run a poll in any sort of case, whether it's publicized or not, it makes no difference that the camera is there. The camera does not change the circumstances. The camera does not change the abuse by the press. If the press is going to abuse the circumstance, they will abuse it no matter what.
Mr. Fox, may I ask this question? Under the Florida rule, does a trial judge, under any circumstances, have the right to exclude cameras, including television cameras, from an entire trial?
Yes, Your Honor, he certainly does.
Has he done so since the rule was adopted?
Yes, Your Honor, they certainly have.
What considerations impel a court to make that ruling?
Well, the rule itself states quite clearly grounds relating to the difference in the effect upon the witness as opposed to the general public, and the difference relating to the type of media coverage. As, for example, the trial court may exclude the electronic media, but not other types of media.
Well, I would distinguish, of course, the printed press media. You have different authorities that control that, but I understand your answer to be that the court does have authority to exclude all cameras from an entire trial.
Yes, Your Honor. There's a case, Palm Beach Newspapers case, which is cited, I believe, in the CBS amicus brief, in which the cameras were excluded, and that issue is...
Why was it done in that case?
In that case, a prisoner had objected to being filmed because of the fact that he felt his life would be in jeopardy if he testified, and the trial court closed the trial. And the media appealed. The Palm Beach, the Fourth District in that case, reversed, stating that there needed to be an evidentiary hearing on the issue, and that the motion showed a prima facie case, but then there should be an evidentiary hearing. Now, that case is currently on appeal to the Florida Supreme Court. We're in a frontier area here, Your Honor. There have been very, very few cases with respect to closure or the media appealing a closure, or the defendant appealing from a issue where closure was denied.
Have you had a case yet where a witness, after being sworn but before taking the stand, simply said to the judge, I've been camera shy all my life, I just don't think I can possibly testify fairly and honestly with cameras on me?
We have a case involving a defendant, Green versus State, cited in our brief, where the defendant stated a long, winding motion about her background and her social upbringing and so forth, and she stated that she was bothered with conferring with her counsel. In that case, the trial court denied closure, but the Third District Court of Appeal reversed that case and ordered an evidentiary hearing stating that the defendant had made a prima facie case.
You're saying, as I understand it, that the judge has full discretion to exclude cameras from the courtroom.
Yes, Your Honor.
If a witness or a juror persuaded him that it was in the best interest of justice.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the full discretion should rest in the trial
court.
Suppose
you had a camera-shy lawyer.
Well, Your Honor, that relates to another issue, I think, an issue which this court has occasionally had a chance to address, Mr. Chief Justice, involving the quality of representation, the quality of trial court judges, and so forth. We submit that the exposure of the trial courts and the attorneys to public scrutiny, I think, would have an educative effect upon the public. I think an incompetent attorney will clearly be demonstrated in front of the cameras. I think a trial judge who is not up on the law will clearly be demonstrated by the actual and real picture of what's going on.
I understood Mr. Justice Powell to be probing at the idea that even a competent lawyer might be less competent if he was allergic to cameras.
Yes, sir.
Therefore, his performance might be negatively affected.
That's correct.
What do you have to say about that?
I would submit to you the man, as the Colorado Supreme Court said in 1956, a strutter, an attorney who's a strutter, an attorney who's a show-off, an attorney who's incompetent is going to be incompetent, a show-off, or a strutter, whether the cameras are there or not.
Well, that doesn't answer the question I put and that I thought Mr. Justice Powell was probing at. What if the very presence of the camera, as with the camera-shy witness, impairs the functioning of a highly self-conscious lawyer, if you can hypothesize that?
Mr. Chief Justice, I would submit to you that that is precisely what we have argued in our brief. We should proceed on a case-by-case basis. In the event that is shown, in the event that a defendant files a 3.850 proceeding in Florida attacking, collaterally attacking the competency of his counsel, then we should proceed on a case-by-case basis. We should not predicate our decision in this case upon conjecture, but upon the demonstrable reality, as the Court stated in Beck versus Washington. The Attorney General of Florida will address the Court now. Thank you.
Mr. Attorney General.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. In the 1965 Estes opinion, Justice Harlan, which was a swing vote in the plurality decision in that case, echoed the underlying philosophy and restricted scope of Justice Clark's opinion when he said, and I quote from that opinion briefly, "Finally, we should not be deterred from making the constitutional judgment which this case demands by the prospect that the day may come when television will have become so commonplace an affair in the daily life of the average person as to dissipate all reasonable likelihood that its use in courtrooms may disparage the judicial process. If and when that day arrives, the constitutional judgment called for now would, of course, be subject to reexamination."
Mr. Smith, do you suppose this Court would give very serious consideration to the claim of a lawyer who said he was used to practicing in a courtroom that only seated 20 people and was now trying a case that seated 300 people, that he just wasn't used to practicing before a large crowd, and therefore the all but 20 should be excluded?
Mr. Justice Rehnquist, I really don't think that that issue would ever be heard by this Court. It wouldn't rise to this level. Certainly, he would be expected to perform as an attorney in that courtroom, whether there was one spectator or 300.
What if it was Yankee Stadium? Powers trial.
We wouldn't. This Court.
Well, you wouldn't
would
argue
not accommodate
that it would be constitutional to try a person in Yankee Stadium.
No, sir. This Court obviously wouldn't accommodate the public to the extent.
You get a public trial in New York,
it? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's about the only way you could get a quote public trial in New York. Would be a building twice the size of Yankee Stadium.
How do you differentiate this from Yankee Stadium? I suppose the audience is even larger here.
The courtroom size will accommodate the number of people that. The particular courtroom designated can
take.
Yeah,
live television, there are a lot more people watching.
Certainly, and the presence of the media in the courtroom and your recent judgment in the Richmond case recognized the surrogate responsibility that the media has in the purpose that they, the function that they perform in bringing to the attention of the public any kind of trial that is newsworthy.
Well, Mr.
Go ahead.
I understand the argument that the televising has an educational public good to it, and I understand that Florida is a sunshine state in many ways. But does the televising, in your submission, improve the quality of justice that's administered in the courtroom?
The experience that we have had to date in Florida, and we have certainly had our share of highly sensational publicized trials, has been that the presence of cameras in the courtroom has indeed improved that process. The fact is, in the Zamora trial, which was a very sensational, highly publicized capital case, was televised gavel to gavel in Florida, and portions of that trial were shown worldwide. The experience in that proceeding was that, for the most part, the media was down the hall or downstairs in a room watching the proceedings on the TV monitor rather than going back and forth in the courtroom carrying messages to each other. The Bundy trial.
Mr. Attorney General, unless Estes is overturned, wouldn't your rule be invalid in a rather large category of cases?
Justice
such as a Zamora case?
We don't think that it's necessary to overturn the SD's opinion to uphold the Florida Supreme Court rule.
Why?
The SD's opinion did not say that television cameras per se were violations of the defendant's constitutional rights.
I asked you about at least the category of trial such as Justice Harlan described in his opinion in that case. He thought there was a type of trial in which television would be per se prejudicial.
I would not.
Now,
certainly
that category of trial wouldn't your rule be invalid in at least some cases under Estes?
Yes, Your Honor. The case could certainly come back before this court where a trial judge did not exercise a proper control of the proceedings and let it...
That isn't Justice Harlan's holding, is it?
No, not at all.
That isn't what he held. That's what his opinion said, and it certainly isn't what the other four justices in the majority said.
Justice Harlan said that obviously he was not willing to go along with the four other justices and on a per se basis deny states the right to televise
proceedings. However, in the notorious trial, there was a per se rule without the necessity of demonstrating any particular prejudice.
My reading of that opinion is he said a sensational trial in 1962 under the facts in the Estes case.
Well, isn't that almost self-defining? Wouldn't any trial in which television was interested in covering be, by definition, a notorious or sensational trial?
No, Your Honor. The experience in Florida is that every news station in our state has a courthouse beat, and it is common in the TV news programs and in the newspapers in Florida that what is going on at the courthouse is reported. And that's not necessarily the sensational trial.
The Zamora case?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Do you think Justice Harlan would have thought the Zamora case fell within his definition of a notorious trial?
I do not, Your Honor, and I would like Judge Baker, who was a trial judge in that case, at the request of the Florida Supreme Court, made a very detailed report of that proceeding, which was conducted during the experiment period of the Florida rule, and distinguished what took place at that trial from the Estes opinion. A full report of Judge Baker's in the appendix to our main brief, but I could point out, if I may, some of his conclusions.
Mr. Attorney General, can I get back to the point?
Yes, sir.
You said that they'll be interested in covering every trial. Well, what do you do in Los Angeles where they have 200 and some courts?
No, sir. I did not mean to imply that the media covers every trial. Major newspapers in our state and TV stations have reporters on the courthouse beat, and that normally in the news segment there will be a minute or so every night for what is happening at the courthouse.
But it won't be every case.
It will not be every case.
Because it obviously can't be.
Absolutely. It would not be every case.
Are you telling us, Mr. Attorney General, that broadcasting 2 minutes and 52 seconds, was it, or 55 seconds of the prosecution's case only, just one side of the case, has contributed something significant to the improvement of the administration of justice in Florida?
Mr. Chief Justice, in particularly a sensational type trial, the media will cover that event. It will be reported on television.
I'm just talking about television now.
Yes,
and
sir.
Broadcasting the live action,
right.
I submit
that it is better for the citizens of our state in those situations to see the actual image and hear those portions of the testimony as it has happened, rather than have to depend on the interpretation that a news commentator might like to give that testimony.
Is there any possibility, significant possibility, that the listening audience, having watched 2 minutes and 55 seconds of the prosecution's case only, and later the jury finds the defendants in a particular case not guilty, that the jurors will be subject to criticism of their neighbors and their friends and their associates for a verdict of not guilty when they have seen evidence only of guilt? A possibility that the court should take into account?
Mr. Chief Justice, that certainly is a possibility, but that possibility exists and does happen, whether cameras are present in the courtroom or not.
In any event, Mr. Attorney General, we don't need to, we mustn't decide whether or not this is a good idea, but the question is whether what Florida has done is constitutionally permissible, tolerable.
That's correct. Whether or not there's inherent prejudice by the mere presence.
But the question of whether it has a deleterious effect on the administration of justice as a whole is part of the total question before this court.
That certainly
would be a good
idea.
Well, is there television stations?
Is there any provision in the Constitution that forbids a state from adopting a procedure that has a deleterious effect on the administration of justice? In hic verba?
Not in hic verba, but your friend suggested
right.
One about the defendant in prison garb, didn't he?
He did, and I don't like to be refereeing what may be a disagreement between the Honorable Chief Justice and Justice Rehnquist, but I may be in that position right here. The Constitution, in the sense of the administration of justice, within a state and what kind of rules a Supreme Court may adopt for that state, the state Supreme Court, so long as they don't rise to a federal constitutional violation, would have discretion to adopt whatever rules they might deem proper. The Florida rule authorizing the presence of the electronic media in the courtroom does that well within constitutional bounds and well within the encouragement that this court has given states to experiment with novel ideas. The experiment has proved successful in Florida. We have had literally hundreds of trials where the cameras have been present in the courtroom, reported generally. Very few situations where there's been an objection. And I submit a big reason for that is the government sunshine policies that we have in our state. The fact that in our state, when our citizens go to a county commission meeting or city commission meeting, even our clemency meetings in capital cases, they see the television camera. The camera is present at all of those proceedings, so it is not in any way a novel experience for the citizens of our states to be around television equipment. It has become commonplace in Florida, as the presence of cameras and television obviously has become commonplace in our daily lives. The most recent Roper report tells us there are more than 90 million TV sets in this country, that television in the average household is on some 6.5 hours a day. If I could comment briefly on the experience in the Zamora trial, which was a highly publicized trial, as I say, in this country and worldwide. Judge Baker took note of Justice Clark's concern about the red light on the camera. Obviously, the state of art in cameras has changed. We don't have lights in the cameras in our courtrooms that indicate when they're on or off, and there is only one camera in the courtroom. Another concern in the Estes case was the fact that the trial judge had to hold no less than 5 hearings about the pretrial coverage to referee disputes between the media. Under the Florida rule, the pooling arrangement as to who will operate the one camera that is present in the courtroom, those decisions are worked out among the media themselves. The court is not called upon to referee any disputes. If there are disputes in that regard, then cameras are not present in the courtroom.
Mr. Attorney General, is there anything in the record to the effect, one way or the other, that when television is present, a larger veneer is needed?
That has not, there's nothing in the record that indicates that, Your Honor. Some 28 states have experimented with cameras being present in their courtrooms. In 8 states, those proceedings may be televised without the consent of the defendant. In 3 states, appellate proceedings are televised without the consent of the defendant's lawyer. In that case, in the remaining states, some 16, television coverage is allowed with the defendant's consent. States have experimented in this area successfully. We urge this court to uphold the Florida Supreme Court rule and the conviction below. Thank you.
Very well, Mr. Attorney General. Mr. Hirshhorn, do you have anything further?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Being around television and watching television is different than being on television. I don't care how many television sets are in a person's home or how many hours a day my children watch TV. When that witness sits down and that camera's present, it's different. In Zamora, there was no objection to the presence of cameras in the courtroom. Zamora was a peculiar case because the defense in that case was that cameras made the defendant insane, and the defendant invited cameras in the courtroom, so Zamora doesn't apply. But Zamora's co-defendant is here, Your Honors. Agrella is here on cert, which this court has been holding, unless it did something with it this past week. Agrella was a separate co-defendant who said because his co-defendant didn't object, he couldn't get a fair trial. That's a collateral matter that has to be addressed. Mr. Justice Harlan said, if every person in Yankee Stadium sat stonily silent, it's not the same as the decorum and the atmosphere of a courtroom. Showing 2 minutes and 55 seconds, showing filmed highlights, is what precipitated, I suggest, and has been argued in the brief, the disaster in Miami in the wake of what we call the McDuffie verdict. In haec verba, the due process clause, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, I suggest to you, prohibits the state of Florida from doing this, and I suggest that the Declaration of Independence, July 4, 1776, requires the consent of the government.
Well, that's no part of the Constitution.
Just its history. I agree. The hypothetical quiet title case, if a television camera plunked its equipment, and that's what we're seeking to exclude, equipment in the courtroom, that quiet title case would become the most important quiet title case ever, because some TV producer had nothing else to do that night and decided to show that.
I can't imagine the ratings would have been too good on that show. Putting that to one side for a moment, one thing troubles me about your argument, Mr. Hirshhorn, on witnesses. If the television camera does adversely affect the witness's ability to testify in a persuasive way, an effective way, here they only showed prosecution witnesses, so whatever harm was done to this trial process presumably would have been prejudicial to the prosecution.
Not necessarily, because to the jury's impact, perhaps this witness was not affected somehow. But to the jury, sitting back there in their jury room, they can be thinking, and we can assume that they are correctly thinking, about which witness's testimony was more important or more relevant. And I think they can say...
But does the jury know which part's being testified?
Oh, yes. They know which part.
Because as I understand, there's no red light anymore.
The problem is, and I now understand the question, the camera wasn't present the whole time. I apologize, Mr. Justice
Stevens.
Oh, I see.
So that they didn't know whether... I understand. All right.
I'm sorry. The camera was only present during jury selection, and the camera was only present during Mr. Scion's testimony. The camera was not present during other witness, during defense testimony, during closing argument. Palm Beach newspapers, I urge the court to read Palm Beach newspapers that were cited by my opponent, because Judge Schultz said that the state attorneys who labor every day with witnesses, that state attorney filed 2 affidavits saying, we got 2 witnesses who don't want to testify. They're fear, they're in concern of their life. Judge Schultz excluded the cameras not from the trial, but from those televising those two witnesses, not from the trial. Because the rule does not permit blanket non-televising of the trial, just the successfully objecting participant. And on appeal, the Fourth District Court of Appeals said, Mr. Trial Judge, an affidavit's not enough because the media has to be given a chance to confront, cross-examine the affidavit. It's an insufficient showing just because two people claim that they're going to get, they believe they're going to get murdered if they testify against the defendant. Why the state would want to have this kind of procedure which infects its own witnesses? It's not easy for the state to get witnesses into court. People don't want to have their lives disrupted, and yet they persist. The frailties of human nature are such that Devitt and Blackmar zero in the standard jury instructions on why the jury has this sole and exclusive province to evaluate the witness's testimony. The First Amendment has yielded in Zurcher to the search warrant. The First Amendment has yielded in Brandsburg to the grand jury. There is no battle here. There's just an effort to preserve the very nerve center of the fact-finding process, the lifeblood of the system, a defendant's right to a fair and impartial trial. Both the First and the Sixth Amendment rights can be observed without violence to either. There's no harm whatsoever if other traditional methods of gathering news, which were in effect when the Constitution was written, are used.
Is that the way you distinguished the written word from the television picture?
No, I distinguish it.
It was in effect at the time the Constitution was written?
I distinguish it by that old Chinese proverb or description. A picture is worth a thousand words. One political cartoon can wreak more damage than a thousand words. Hundreds of feet on TV can do even
more. Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Delta Air.